In this episode of the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast, my co-host Leaf Tulane is here to drop off his latest. Is it a mock draft or a big board?
I got a big board for you guys.
All right. He's going to drop off his latest big board after the NBA Combine. And let's see who moved up, who moved down after the Combine. Stay tuned. Big shout out to each and every person that has made the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast your first listen of the day. And this episode is brought to you by Game Time. So download the Game Time app, create an account, and use Locked On NBA for $20 off your first purchase. That is last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. I'm your host, Rafael Barlow, the director of scouting for NBA Big Board and the founder of NBADraftJunkies.com. And my co-host is Leaf Tulane. I feel like Leaf hasn't been on this week, and I guess I feel like that because it's true. After being around you about 3 or 4 days all day last week, I see you got your combine credential in the background.
Got it right here.
And your Locked On shirt for those on YouTube, you can see Leaf is representing. All right, so the NBA Combine. It was a great experience for you, and we've probably talked about it on Locked On Jazz. You've been hosting Locked On Jazz this week. You're filling in. You got big shoes to fill. How's that been for you?
It's been a blast getting to talk about my hometown team, a team that I care very deeply about, and getting a little parlay, a little bit of expertise on the NBA draft with a team that I know very well, having worked for them and watched all their games since I've been about 4 years old. So it's definitely a fun experience, and before I started working for Locked On, I've been listening to the Locked On Jazz since for probably about half my life. So it's been pretty fun filling in for that.
That's pretty cool. So I just was on the Locked On Jazz. We did an episode, I don't know, about 20 minutes ago. And Leaf was in the driver's seat. Now I'm back in the driver's seat. Being a passenger is actually pretty fun. Having someone have to lead all the questions. But all right, they don't want to hear anything about that. Everybody wants to hear about your latest big board. Like I said, I didn't know if it was a big board or a mock draft. I knew that you had updated something. So let's just go right at it. All right. Any surprises at number one on your big board? I mean, you know.
No, that spot's been remained unchanged. And most people have kind of gone back and forth with like two through four. I've stayed pretty consistent with my top four throughout the year.
All right. So who is number two on your big board?
Scoot Henderson. I know he didn't play in front of us at the Combine, and he didn't play great or much at all towards the end of the year at the G League Ignite. I just saw a tape that you can't teach at the beginning of the year. You watch him play against Victor Wembanyama, which is as good as a competition as you're going to see. And in that first game, he looked phenomenal. And you watch him just get to spaces and do things guards in recent draft classes haven't been able to do. And so even though I was as high on Brandon Miller and I remain high on Amen Thompson, I just think he's kind of approached an untouchable spot at two because I don't think they have the traits and the skill accumulation that Scoot Henderson does.
Do you think he still goes number two in the draft?
I'm less certain of that. I think he should, for what it's worth. I just don't know what Charlotte's going to do.
Yeah, I have reported on my newsletter that I heard that Charlotte is open to moving back in the draft. And this is just my opinion on it. This is 100% my opinion. So somebody may listen to it and then turn it into a tweet. I wonder if Charlotte is concerned about the PR that would come with Brandon Miller and bringing Miles Bridges back. I think those two would be fine together. But I wonder, is it a situation where, you know, Miles Bridges had his, you know, this domestic violence issue, sat out, cost him a whole season. And then, you know, there are some people that still are giving Brandon Miller a hard time for a situation that he has been cleared of. So I wonder, you know, for Michael Jordan, who's looking to sell the team, is it a situation where he may pass on Miller out of fear of the PR? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, that's a rational fear. I don't know if that's something behind the scenes that they're truly considering, but I think they have to. I'm not sure. Should they take someone other than Brandon Miller, aka Scoot Henderson? I bet it's more reliant on basketball than it is the PR, but I'm sure that goes into some of the decision making, and maybe that does factor into some of the trade rumors. It's not a pretty look by any means, but I think they've got to have their focus on the basketball players. And I don't mean that in a callous way. I just think that is a franchise that has kind of struggled. I mean, quite frankly, the Charlotte Hornets or the Bobcats back in the day, they've never even made an Eastern Conference finals appearance. If that's a stat, a little tidbit for you guys, this is a team that needs to focus on basketball, and they have the opportunity to get a guy who can be a star in the NBA. So I don't think that they should let the PR dictate where they pick, but I would say that has to factor into the way they represent their team on an outward image front.
Yeah, a year ago, Charlotte was 43-39. I think, if I'm not mistaken, if you look at Luka's first 2 years, him and LaMelo Ball had pretty much identical records. The problem was Luka made it to the playoffs, and I think the East, you know, Melo just, like, they had those two terrible play-in games, and then, I mean, just last summer was an absolute disaster for Charlotte. I actually do think the PR plays a little bit of a factor. I even think that the PR plays a role in these organizations firing coaches so fast. I mean, despite winning, I mean, you think about it, like Frank Vogel won, but nobody ever thought he was a good coach. I mean, when the Bucks lost, despite Bud winning, it just seemed like the fans were on his neck, and that it just seemed like the fans and PR. And I actually talked to a former NBA GM at the Combine, and he mentioned that he, and I mean, he has a really good success record, I mean, with a couple of teams, but he mentioned that, trying to think of the best way to word this, but anyway, he mentioned that because of the way, like, the fans and the media have portrayed him, his name is considered more so of a negative. His failures are broadcasted more than his wins. And he mentioned, like, oh, if, you know, a network named me as a finalist for an open GM job, the perception would be so bad from the fans and the PR is that they wouldn't give me a shot anyway, even though I have a pretty good track record. So anyway, so I said I'll just say this. I do think PR plays somewhat of a role, and we'll see if Charlotte is going to look to pair Brandon Miller with Miles Bridges, because from what it looks like, Miles Bridges is coming back. All right, at number three.
Number three for me right now is Amen Thompson. I think there's an airtight margin between him and Brandon Miller, but I'll give the rationale as to why I have Amen ahead right now. I think the way that the NBA is played, you have to have a trait that is so good that differentiates you to be a superstar. For instance, you could argue, oh, what's Luka's? Like, he's not that big. He's not, like, that strong. He's not that fast. You know, there's people, to me, it's positional size for Luka. And then he's got amazing feel and a million other things he's very, very good at. But for Amen Thompson, he's huge for the position he plays. And he's a first percentile athlete, or 99th percentile athlete. He is in the top 1% is what I meant to say there. He's 99th percentile athlete. And guys that are like him, like Ja Morant, say what you will about Ja Morant, he gets the rim and makes everyone around him get good looks. I think there's deficiencies in his game. There are deficiencies in Amen Thompson's. But I think because you have a high floor with that athleticism defensively, just able to facilitate, that there's a chance that he can be a superstar as opposed to a star. And I think Brandon Miller is more in the star realm because he reminds me more of a Danny Granger or a Chris Middleton than he does a Paul George, which is someone I'll take some lashback on this. I compared him to Paul George when making the initial pitch, and we talked about him in like August or something. So I'll tone it down a little bit, but I see a little more a mix between Paul George and Danny Granger than I do truly Paul George.
Okay. All right. So number four is
Brandon Miller.
Okay. All right, so we've talked about Miller. Number five. This is where it can get interesting. This is, I want to hear who you got at number five.
I've got Cam Whitmore there. I think Whitmore's a guy that has all the skills to score in a 6'6", 235-pound frame that has a 41-inch vertical and is statistically very good at shooting, statistically very good at finishing at the rim, statistically like athletic in terms of analytics, like they dictate he's very good at that. He's very good at isolation. He's very good at finishing in transition. He's very good at catch and shoot. So all these things to me compile and then match what I see with my eyes. I see that he can create space, although he tends to go jump shot when he goes left and right. It means he's going to the rim. There's just a lot of things that are unteachable at a young age. Like 12 months ago, not even, he was dominating relatively poor competition, but dominating U18s for his country. And I think there's a way that in the NBA with more spacing, you get more of aggressive driving. And I think with more spacing, his catch and shoot numbers will continue to be good because I really do buy his shot.
All right. When we return, I want to talk a little bit more about Cam Whitmore and find out who Leaf has at number six. But let's talk about Game Time, because if you are trying to buy tickets, I have an app or a website you can go to where you can buy these tickets, and it's not stressful. Game Time is fast, and they have easy ways to buy tickets for all sporting events, music, comedy, theater. They have killer deals on last-minute tickets, and they have a best price guarantee, so you can stop stressing over the tickets, and you can get hyped for the fun that you will have. Again, flash deals on last-minute tickets. It's easy to find and buy tickets for any kind of event. You get images of the seats, and they have a low price guarantee, event cancellation protection, and job loss protection. So forget planning way in advance. Game Time has deals on tickets right up to the day of the event. So if you are looking to go to the big Bud Crawford, Errol Spence fight in Las Vegas, Game Time. You got to check it out on Game Time because, again, I keep saying it, exclusive flash deals on tickets, football, basketball, baseball, concerts, theater, more. And with their guarantee, it means you'll always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time is so confident that you won't. But if you do, they'll credit you 110% of the difference. Once you buy, you get the tickets in a matter of seconds. Two taps on your phone, you're set. They're sent directly to your phone. You won't have to dig through your email. So go to the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code LOCKEDONNBA for $20 off your first purchase. Again, LOCKEDONNBA for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed. Once again, big shout out to each and every person that has made the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast your first listen of the day. The numbers are going up, obviously, because we are getting closer to the draft and fans are looking to hear our draft takes. And I feel like some of the stuff we are probably going to repeat that we've been talking about since October. But again, big shout out to all the new listeners. Big shout out to all the old listeners. And the listeners were telling Leaf that they listen to the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast. Actually, it was NBA personnel that were telling Leaf that they listened to the NBA Big Board podcast. So that was a pretty big deal. All right, at number six, who's number six on your big board?
Jairus Walker. And this is one that I've gone 6 through 8 has fluctuated for me. Jairus Walker, I got a pitch from an agent that had no ties to Jairus Walker, who said if Jairus Walker went to the SEC like G.G. Jackson or like Brandon Miller did, and he played on a team similar to what G.G. did at South Carolina, he made the pitch of Ole Miss was his example, he'd average 19-9 or 18-9 and be a consensus top five pick. I had Jairus at 7, so it's not like I made him like in a monumental leap here, but I really liked that pitch because his point is that Houston didn't showcase what Jairus's star potential could be. And so it's harder to envision. But if you see him in an open gym like this guy clearly had, I think it's easier to believe that.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it all season long. I've heard NBA scouts say you don't see what Jairus Walker can do unless you attend a U of H practice. So that makes sense. I mean, I think his passing is going to be the separator. Number seven, there's a name that seems like it's sliding.
I've got Osar Thompson, number seven here. I assume right. That's who.
Yes. So yeah. This has been a debate lately. And if you go off big boards, mocks, they have Amen number one. But I've been hearing from multiple people that they are not for sure that Amen is the better twin. And some have mentioned that people thought Amen was number one, the better of the twins, and then everybody else has kind of followed. They mentioned Osar is the two-time overtime elite MVP. He is the better shooter. And I've even had someone say that they feel like if you really watch the games, I forgot the name of their team, City Reapers or whatever, the two twins play on the same team. Their offense was better when Osar was running the show as opposed to Amen. And someone even told me that Amen is really not a point guard. And this is a scout that had been following him. He mentioned that Osar was the better point guard in his opinion, and that Amen has been misevaluated as a point guard. What are your thoughts on that? And why do you have Osar behind Amen?
Okay, so I focus primarily on college basketball for most of my evaluations, and I've watched plenty of the Thompsons and plenty of Wembanyama and the majority of the guys now. But I'll admit that I haven't been able to watch every game to have a feel of which one conducts the team better, because there are some games where you see more conducting of the offense from Amen, some where Osar runs it, but it wasn't enough to formulate like a strong opinion in that regard. That said, I've always made the pitch, and you've heard me say this a number of times, that Osar is a better prospect than advertised by many, because I think he can be a point guard. The reason Amon's regarded as the better prospect by myself and just about everyone is because he's established more as the point guard. So the deficiencies that show for both the Thompson twins is shooting. What hides that deficiency is when you have the ball and you don't have to shoot as an off-ball weapon. Like, you can have the ball and not make any worry of it. You can get downhill and create for others. So Osar, the reason he's lower by most people's boards is because he's a two guard. But to me, I think the upside appeal of Osar is very, very high, and which is why I would really love to see him slip to the Jazz, quite frankly. I mean, if we're talking about Locked On Jazz, I made this point earlier this week, of if he's there, you could be getting a point guard at 6'7", defensive star capacity. And like everyone talks about Cason Wallace and Anthony Black as the best defenders at the point guard. Well, why not Osar Thompson? So to answer your question, I feel more confident and more comfortable in Amen playing a point guard at the NBA more immediately. So that's why he's higher. But I don't think there's that big of a gap between their playmaking abilities. It's just one's more used to being in that role and more harnessed than the other.
So to play devil's advocate, Osar averaged 6.1 assists per game. Amen averaged 6.2. So if it's just a few assists short, despite not having the ball as much in his hands, does that count for anything?
I think it means he's got playmaking instincts. I think to contextualize that, a lot of it's in the open court. So I think he's got less repetitions in the half court. But you're talking to someone who thinks he's a point guard. So I'm an easy sell. I think teams might be more careful saying, well, he doesn't have much point guard experience. He's always played with his brother who's been the point guard. So I can see why they're reluctant to do so when there's a lot banking on it. But me personally, I'm all aboard the play him at point guard and see what happens train.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Again, he's considered the better shooter. He's won the MVP twice. He hit the biggest shots, but yet people don't think he's the better twin of the two. All right, who is number eight on your big board?
Number eight for me is Cason Wallace. He's someone that I think has very few deficiencies in his game. I think his strengths could be even further capitalized on at the NBA level, as you see from a lot of Kentucky guards. I think he's learning to play the point guard, so that's actually an upside thing. I think he's a really good defensive point of attack guy. My one concern I came away with from the combine is, you know this, when we are walking by there's a lot of people around. And some of them, you're like, wow, he's bigger than I thought. Well, Cason Wallace, according to my eyes, and I'm about 6 foot, maybe without shoes, probably 6 foot one with shoes. Cason Wallace didn't appear too much taller than me. And so for the billing of a big guard, I was a little bit worried. But from a basketball perspective, I like everything there is to offer. And that's what I actually value. But I just think that I'm not much of a measurables person. I don't really care unless someone's got like an enormous wingspan. But I would say that put me a little more cautious about picking him as a guy to be a two-guard defender. That made me a little more cautious than saying like, oh, he's Marcus Smart, because Marcus Smart's a big guy to me.
How tall are you?
I'd say I'm 6 foot, 6'1" with shoes.
Cason measured at 6. I think he measured at 6'2.5" without shoes.
Yeah. My eyes weren't lying. I wasn't making up my height. Rafael and I hung out all week and we played some ball. I'm good. Not trying to add on inches here.
6'8.5" wingspan. That was his wingspan.
No, and I buy that. And that matters more to me than the height. The reason I bring up the other thing is not to be like, oh, I was there, he's not that big. It's that in today's NBA, there's value for size at positions. And I mentioned that as like, that's your super, like your trait. What's your strength? The reason that I've cared about this specifically from a Jazz perspective, as I've hosted Locked On Jazz this past week, is the Jazz have talked about all along that they want Colin Sexton to play two guard off the bench or as a starter. And if he's starting, you need to have some size next to him, or you're going to run into the same issue the Jazz ran into for years of Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell. Even though Donovan Mitchell had a 6'10 wingspan, he was 6'1".
Yeah.
So I think that was my concern as opposed to him as a player. That was more of a fit thing. But I think it's good to educate people that expect him to be a 6'4" powerhouse like Marcus Smart is. But from a basketball player's perspective, I'm all aboard what he does well. I think he's going to be a better shooter in the NBA. I think he's going to get to space, punish drop coverage from the mid-range, and be a good point of attack defender.
Yeah, I saw an article. A couple people sent it to me. And I guess some people know that I know Cason. And they were asking me about another article that was written about concerns about his back, saying he has a bad back. So I went straight to the source. Well, I didn't talk to Cason. I talked to his dad. And his dad said there are no issues with his back. His back is totally fine. He had back spasms one game, but somehow it kind of got blown out that his medicals could be a concern because they thought he had a bad back. So I just kind of wanted to address that. All right, number 9. Who is number 9 on your big board?
Number 9 for me is Taylor Hendricks. And this is someone that I've gone back and forth. He's kind of fluctuated for me from 9 through 12. And I haven't watched any new film to make myself reevaluate, but I just thought it differently. I think there's value to being a superstar in your role around there. I recently looked at the last 10, 9 picks, and the best player, in my opinion, is Jeremy Sochan. And like that made me realize, okay, maybe you're not getting a star here. And 9 is an adequate spot for a guy like Taylor Hendricks, who I don't foresee ever being a star, but someone who can star in his role and really elevate a team to winning a playoff series, winning multiple playoff series. And I think he's going to shoot well in the NBA. I think he's going to be a good defender in the NBA, but I don't think he's got the on-ball potential himself, which is something I typically like to put in my top players. So he's been one of the guys that's moved up, and it hasn't been from watching anything new. It's just a different perspective that I've adopted after talking to a lot of NBA people, yourself, Richard, and many other people at the combine. And I think at the moment I'm sold on that as the logic that means he can be a top 10 pick and I will have no qualms with it.
All right. If you look at those lists of the past drafts, what number a guy was selected at, it can be pretty depressing, because I actually did one today. I'm a Blazers fan, and they were talking about the Blazers number 3 pick for Siakam. And somebody was like, oh, he would be a terrible, basically saying Siakam isn't worth the number 3 pick. So I went and pulled up the past 3 picks from like the last 10 or so years. I mean, there's some wins on there, like Luka, Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Embiid, Bill, but there are also some names in there like Derek Favors, Enes Kanter, Otto Porter, Jahlil Okafor. RJ Barrett. RJ Barrett's going to be good. I think he's going to make an all-star. LaMelo, he's already an all-star. Evan Mobley's going to be an all-star. Jabari Smith. But even at number three, you're probably over the last 20 years, you're still, you know, you may get some all-stars, but you're not a lot of, I should say, franchise changers, but definitely more at three than at 10. All right, when we return, we'll finish out some of the names on Leaf's big board, but I haven't got my bird dogs. Leaf got his in the mail. I'm jealous. I have not got my bird dogs. So Leaf, tell the audience about your bird dogs.
The bird dogs were waiting on my bed when I got back from the combine, and I've lived in them ever since. They're sporty but sleek. They look good. I said this and when I was advertising for them earlier, is I've worn them three days out of the 6 days I've been back, because I got pairs.
Have you washed them?
Yeah, I've got two pairs, and okay, one of them I've worn twice, and one I've worn once. I'm a very cleanly person. And then the reason this is important is they're multifaceted. You can wear them to multiple occasions. I went to a barbecue with my friends, and I wore them, and I got compliments for the shorts. And then I played tennis the next day, and I got complimented. Well, I didn't get complimented that time, but I imagine I would have. Because they were comfortable, and you could play sports in them. And then my other pair has a built-in liner. So if people like that for security while playing sports, it's also a nice fit as well. And Lockdown's got a great code for them as well, if you're interested in getting a little discount for your first purchase.
Yeah, I can't tell you firsthand, but I know that they say that the bird dogs fit good, they're comfortable, and Leaf can attest to their versatility. So you, if you want a pair of bird dogs, just go to birddogs.com/LockedOnNBA. And when you enter the promo code LockedOnNBA, they will throw in a free custom bird dogs Yeti style tumbler with every order. Did you get your tumbler?
Oh, I do have my tumbler. I have not used it yet, but I drink a ton of water. So I will have that with me while I travel from now on, because I need as much water as possible. I think I was dehydrated from the combine when I got back.
I've experienced that. Now, are you going to hoop in your bird dogs?
Haven't yet, but I'm planning on playing tomorrow and Saturday. So I will definitely let you know if I do.
Yeah, for those that are listening, Leaf can hoop. Leaf has game. He loves the Eurostep floater. So
that was an experimenting move. I wouldn't say that's certainly in my bag, but I'm glad you guys were appreciating the diversity.
It was definitely in the bag, and I know I need to get in better shape. All right, we left off at number 9. Who is number 10 on your big board?
Number 10 for me is Anthony Black. This is someone that mid-year, I think I had as high as 7, definitely 8. And the reason he's falling for me is I think what the last impression I got from him, and I watched Arkansas probably 17 times live, just because I love college basketball, and I've seen them since watching film, is that Anthony Black does what he does well, very well, and getting to the rim and relentlessly pressuring the ball while on defense. But I didn't see much growth throughout the year of his intermediate game. And it was not for lack of attempts. It was that he struggled doing it, but I like the fact he kept trying. As I saw players around his range, I thought they improved their game throughout the season. I thought Cason Wallace got to his spots more so and hit those shots. So players like him have moved up, whereas Anthony Black kind of plateaued to me. But I will give some context and a bit of a caveat here, is that I don't love the fact that Anthony Black is getting penalized for his poor shooting and his lack of assist numbers and lack of finishing, because if you watched Arkansas, you know they had absolutely no spacing. And he was the reason for any good shots that they got. So I think numbers aren't very kind to him. And watching him, there's context that if you can envision an NBA game where he can score, I'll admit I have a bit of a concern about his jump shot still, because it's low and it's a bit slower. But I saw a video yesterday of him working out, and it looked a little bit different. So I'm going to have to analyze that a little further before I see if I truly buy it. But there's the holistic approach with Anthony Black.
All right, we've got through with your top 10. And for the sake of time, we won't have time to go over all 150 guys that you have on your big board. I know you have a pretty extensive big board. since the lottery, who has been, or who are some of the biggest risers since the lottery, and why?
I wouldn't say anyone took an enormous leap for me. I think one that in my mind has risen the most is Jairus Walker.
Okay.
And I mentioned him earlier. But then, I mean, he only moved up a spot or two, but I can envision it better after speaking with that agent. And one guy that I've moved up a lot, and this has been a process a long time coming for me, was Leonard Miller. I had him creeping into the near my lottery. Now he's firmly in there. He's at 13 right now. And I just can't see a way where he's not an impactful player. And I think he's got more potential than many people believe that a guy who is more of a rebounder and runner is, just because what he was billed as last year was a guy who's a tall guard. And so I believe that versatility and that level of production against professionals at 19 years old is hard to say he won't succeed at the NBA.
All right, I'm going to run off a few names, and I want you to tell me where you have them. One guy that I have not heard hardly anything about, and I don't even remember seeing him at the Combine, was Bryce Sensabaugh. Did you see him at all?
I never saw him. He, for me, is at number 18. Mm-hmm. He's fluctuated between 16 and 20 for most of the year for me. I like the way he gets to spots. I like the way he scores. But he does it in an unconventional fashion that I sometimes have to be very imaginative to think of a way for him to do that for an NBA team. Like, the team would have to be catered for him. Last year, you'll remember, I didn't love Johnny Davis because I didn't think he scored in a way that is conducive to the NBA. But I did like Malachi Branham to a degree. And I think he's towing a line that Malachi Branham towed, who was his predecessor at Ohio State, where he scores in an old school way, and you have to find the right team for it. So I have my tempered expectations for Sensabaugh in that way. But I think Sensabaugh is a better athlete than Branham. He just needs to lose a little bit of weight and use and kind of score shooting threes more than he likes to go to his post and mid-range game, as much as it is pretty and refreshing to see that kind of different game in the NBA.
But in his defense, he shot 40% from three. And it was some of his shots were difficult shots off the dribble. So I think for him, the transition won't be as difficult because he can shoot. I was concerned about Branham because I felt like he just rarely took any threes. But I think with Sensenbaugh, the transition shouldn't be as bad. But I don't want to say that he wasn't at the Combine. I just don't remember seeing him. Richard said he didn't see him. I'd have to look and see if he even tested. And the first thing that comes to mind if he wasn't there was, I know there's some concerns about, yeah, he didn't measure, he didn't test or do anything. There are some concerns about, you know, he had some previous knee injuries. I wonder if that played a role in him really not doing much at the Combine. All right, let's see. Jet Howard. Where do you have Jet Howard on your big board?
Jet Howard's at number 27 for me right now.
Okay. Is he the guy that you're probably lower on than the consensus?
I would say that guy is probably Grady Dick is the one they see my big board are arguing with me. And I think it's for a similar reason. I think Jet Howard he's slipping for me because he measured in at far shorter than he was billed at. He was billed at 6'8", and he measured in at 6'5". So part of his appeal was being a big shooter of the ilk of like Michael Porter Jr., for lack of a perfect comparison. That's just kind of the ilk that he was billed as being. He also struggled to defend, rebound, and wasn't particularly laterally quick. And I've heard he's might be having some ankle concerns.
Yep.
So that it's partially health and partially just the archetype of player is different than what I envisioned. If he's more of a guard than a three or even a four's height, I think that makes his upside a little more limited. As for Grady Dick, if people are going to get on me on this, I've got him 19th on my board. And I've said this before. I like when players have upside and versatility to their game. I think he is not a good defender. I think he's a very good shooter, but he's not the best shooter in the class. I think that's Jordan Hawkins. Mm-hmm. I think his height is good, but unspectacular. And I think there's only so many roles for him. Like, yes, he can shoot. But I think Kevin Huerter is an upside for him. I think that's closer to a ceiling than people are willing to say. And was Kevin Huerter impactful in a playoff series? No, he was played out of it. He was unable to defend. And so I think you got to be able to play two ways in today's NBA in the same way that Isaac Okoro, someone who's excellent defensively but struggles to shoot the ball, was played off the court in his playoff series. So my rationale for both of those players is they're so limited to one specialist item that they're very good at, which is shooting, which is the hot commodity. Mm-hmm. And neither of them are as big as they were billed to be. I think there's a limited upside, and I tend to be a guy who prioritizes upside as opposed to floor.
Question: where did you get the Jet Howard measurements? Because according to the NBA app, he didn't measure.
I think I saw it from a pro day that he measured at, but maybe it was inaccurate. I believe it was a good source, but it could have just been misinformation. So if that is the case, I apologize. But I said he was 6'5" and a half is what my one said.
That makes sense. Some did it at pro days. I know he didn't do it at the NBA combine. Well, that wraps up this episode. I mean, we'll definitely have to do another one. I mean, there's just never enough time to do a full big board. So we'll definitely have one or two more before we get to the draft. Once again, big thanks to everyone that's made the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast your first listen of the day. Hopefully everyone had a great week. And we will be back on Monday. Once again, it's Rafael Barlow, Leaf Tulane, and we are out.